What I want to do tonight is to come back to some of the issues we have been discussing in terms of governance. Governance, so what? Who governs for who? Who is governed? What is governed? What is not governed? Who governs when nobody governs? I want to play with those ideas by thinking about a sort of case which are the large cities. In many ways, the first lecture, I gave you the result of a book I've been just sending to the publisher. Second lecture, it was half worked, okay? The analysis is not finished, but the base is there. Tonight, I'm just putting forward some ideas for a big research project we're thinking and developing in my research center at Sciences Po. We have a research group called Cities Are Back in Town, and we're starting to think about something we put together in the forthcoming years. So it's really thinking about a new big research project, okay? Playing with some ideas about governance. And of course, I will build upon some of my previous work, because most of my work was in the past on regions and cities in Europe. But I will be thinking about the more case of a larger city. And as you know, we know that capitalism is becoming more financial, but capitalism is also much more urbanized. And in some ways, one of the things I'd like you to get tonight, because I know it's not what you do in this center, is that particularly in the literature on the varieties of capitalism or in political economy, we tend to compare countries, sometimes regions. The point I want to make is more and more we know we do multi-level work, but the urban dimension is more and more central to understand the change of capitalism. When I was doing this sort of argument some years ago, people were saying, he's interested in the cities, we don't care so much. Nowadays, of course, with the subprime crisis, people understand that much more precisely. So the argument will be, in a simple way, the old literature, and we'll use the urban literature to start with, explaining to us that the rise of very large cities make them completely ungovernable. They are big urban Leviathan, and we cannot think in politics or in governance terms. And I will try to dispute that, and to show that maybe by revising a governance framework, we may design research questions to understand what is still governed within these large cities by political mechanism. And I will present some of the ideas we have to work on various large cities, particularly Paris, London, Mexico, and São Paulo. So again, more than usual, the view about what's going on in terms of those large cities and governance questions, then the way we may revise the conceptual framework, and what could be done as a research strategy. And my timetable is really 7 years for a research project, okay, with a group of people. So Bourgogne will say it's an ambitious project, yes, but we have started a lot of work in the past, and we'll be a big group of people working on this issue, hopefully. You remember that historically capitalism was urban, remember Max Weber, of course, and then we knew that it was the other way around, it was a form of capitalism that defined the type of cities we had. So industrialization built or developed or was structuring what we call the industrial cities. But you're aware that nowadays, a lot of the literature on innovation, on infrastructure, is emphasizing the fact that capitalism is urban again. I will not develop that too much tonight, but I will mention the work of my colleague Michael Stauper at Sciences Po, who has two very important books coming out this year on the questions of the growth of the cities. When you do cities, you have lots of images and maps. Okay, so tonight, by contrast to police instruments, which is less sexy to show, we'll have more maps and things. So just to remind you what we have in mind. These are very basic stuff, but just for warming your mind. Number one, the new urban world. And you know that nowadays, about 50% of the world is urban, which means that the concentration of population in big cities is taking place, mainly in Asia and America. This is the view from the sky. And you see that this urban world, there are big concentration. And some people are telling us, who cares about cities? Seen from the moon, what is important is that you have big urban concentration in different parts of the world. Some part of the world is becoming completely empty. And some part of the world is heavily concentrated in either big urban areas or urban zones with high density, like the east side of the US, Europe, Japan, India, and the coast in China. Okay? What we know is we have more and more concentration around the coast and in the largely in the world. So there are more and more concentration in those urban areas. Where are the big phenomenon for urban scholars is that by the turn of the 20th century, remember when Zimmel was writing about the metropolis and the big city, that meant between 500 million and 2 or 3 million inhabitants. New York, London, Paris, Berlin, Prague, and that was it. Of course, nowadays, the top world's megacities, the scale is different. Every 10 years, the UN is saying a big city is 2 million, 5, 8, 20. Now 20 seems to be the border. And of course, you know that the big concentration of not just inhabitants, but also, you know, concentration of lots of things. Tokyo, Mumbai, Mexico, São Paulo, New York, Delhi, Shanghai, Kolkata, not far from New Delhi, Jakarta, Dakar, Lagos, Karachi, Buenos Aires, Los Angeles, Cairo, Manila, Beijing, Rio, Osaka, Istanbul, which is of course the largest European city these days, and Moscow. And of course, Europe is not so much at the center. When I give this talk in India, people tell me, why do you still work on this small declining part of Europe called Western Europe? Who cares? This is the world now. You see where these things are and where those cities are in a static way, a fixed way, concentration of inhabitants. Asia, as mentioned before, the Americas, Africa growing up, and a little bit Europe. Okay, so we have these very large cities between 10 and 20 million inhabitants. Europe, well, Europe, not so much nowadays. So of course, my friends, the geographer tonight, I will mock the geographers a lot, okay? Because I think they're getting wrong on lots of things. But I like Le Pen immensely. So my colleague French geographers, you know, they like to put Paris in the center of the world, one way or another. So they're telling us, you know, it doesn't matter. The future of Europe is very simple. Peripheries everywhere and the making of a super mega great megapolis called Paris, London, Rotterdam, Brussels, maybe Frankfurt on the edge, and all the rest becomes a periphery. Okay? So it's a view about the future of the world is about big super big cities, and the rest doesn't matter. To understand those changes and what does it mean in terms of political economy, we have three approaches in urban studies. Okay? One approach is telling us, nowadays, who cares about cities? The most important point is to understand the urbanization process. The state, irrelevant. What is important nowadays is the fact that capitalism is producing a huge urbanization process, which is restructuring cities all over the world. There's a long tradition from Henri Lefebvre to David Harvey, a great Marxist scholar, Manuel Castells, my colleague Neil Brennan, now in New York, in Harvard, fantastic scholar. And their argument is basically what we see is the development of an undifferentiated urban world. And what is important is not the place anymore, or not the borders, it's really this urbanization process. Capitalism as a huge urban force, transforming cities, and this accumulation process concentrated in the big city. And in that view of the world, the scenario is that there's one model of cities corresponding to the needs of capitalism at a given moment. So historically, the model was Manchester, Cape Town, or what we saw in Lahore here, of course. And then there was another model, which was Chicago, a mix of metropolis and industrial city. Then Los Angeles was the sort of fate of a new capitalism based on media, on aerospace, on high tech. And nowadays, they tend to look at Shanghai, telling us this is the new model of city. So a view of the world which is convergence, one big theoretical framework explained by capitalism. And that's what is important. Does governance matter in that model? Not at all. Okay, governance is just a conclusion where, you know, the dominant force of bourgeoisie will organize competition between cities, and they're driving the undermining of states and organizing basically the rise of city-states in competition all over the world. Okay, so in this view of the world, cities don't matter. What is taking place is new forms of capitalist urbanization, so governance doesn't matter at all, and politics not much. The second classic view in urban research, which is just the opposite, is really to say, no. What matters, if you want to understand, is to look at one particular city. And a bunch of people, they spend their lives studying the same city. And they do great work. Historians, anthropologists, sociologists sometimes, like Chicago, which is a favorite place for any urban scholar. There are about 900 books being published on Chicago. We call them Chicagologists. And of course, you know, in different domain, in France, we have a Marseilleologist, because Marseille is different, of course. And of course, in Italy, we have a Napoleologist, because Napoli is so different. And every city is different in some ways. So you have people really tell us, if you want to understand anything about a city, you have to understand the history, the anthropology, and each city is completely different. And that's one way to do urban research, which has been very strong. You see in London, the Urban Age Project is saying, you know, urbanization, but at the same time, each city is different. And the architect, they love that. They either say every city is the same, or every city is different because of the architecture. And the third tradition in urban studies to try to understand. Of course, in this context, the governance, the politics is not very important either. What is important really is much more the culture, the social structure to some extent, but very much the competition between social groups. It's a more social historian approach where all the issues of governance and politics is a little bit not so strong. And the third approach, which has not been so strong, and I'm part of this third group, has been trying to say, if you want to understand the development of cities, you have to compare them to start with, because they are not all the same, but they are not completely unique either. And trying to combine and understand by comparison how you can think about the political economy of those different cities. And if you do that, you think that the trajectories vary over time. And to explain those variations, you try to bring in some element of political economy and governance. So the varieties of, you know, urban political economy, if you want. In literature these days, because of these very large cities, the view is rather to emphasize on the fact that those big metropolises are ungovernable. The dominant view is urbanization matters, not cities. We see the rise and rise of big urban spaces which are more or less similar. And we see nowadays more and more circulations between people, migration, ideas, flux. So the view of the world is trade and exchanges and circulations, cities one to, you know, going from one city to the next city. So it's a very non-political view of what's going on, with the idea of a rise of city-states, and you have lots of literature on Hong Kong, Dubai, maybe London will become a city-state one day. And it is places with extreme difference and inequalities. So you either do anthropology and look at day-to-day experience, or you look at this huge urbanization process and the convergence towards one model. Now that's what we see, mostly. And to look at this circulation, this huge literature by geographers, trying to map out. So on this map you can see shipping roads, major roads, airlines, and a bit of telecoms as well. Very rough measure, really, but, you know, this is the view of the world. Who cares about the state anymore? This is just the state accompanies what's going on. You see those links, those dots between various places. You could make typologies of cities. You know, people love ranking and typologies. Some of our friends, they do that all the time. And you can measure the number of links associated to various cities. And if you measure in a very crude way, I must say, my colleagues from Loughborough, Peter Taylor and his colleagues, have spent 20 years to measure all sorts of flux. And they tell us there are two capitals in the world, London and New York. Will you see more flux going on? And then you are a few second rate and then third rate and fourth rate city. But basically, they try to map out the more globalized the world becomes, the more concentration around some capitals are taking place. It's not just concentration of inhabitants, but concentration of flux. Okay? So cities, you have to think about them as fixed places of concentration, but also are places of circulation and flux. Very classic ideas. This is a nice one I like on submarine cable map. You know, this is what's going on under the sea. You have lots of exchanges going on, of course. And this is coming from Neil Brenner, my friend from Harvard. And he says the urbanization is so important that nowadays you have to think about urbanization beyond Earth. This is space. This is all the junks, all the satellites, all the things that we have sent to space. So you see, the new frontier is the urbanization of space. And we are more and more going to colonize. So the new frontiers is how we're going to organize the urbanization of space. Okay? So geographers, lots of ideas. That's a good thing about them. So the question is, the problem is we cannot understand those things, and we cannot use old categories like governing or whatever. It doesn't make any sense, because you have huge, big cities. 20 million. Some of my urban geographers friend are even more ambitious. They're telling us 20 million is a bit conservative, really. Because what is going on nowadays, if we come back to this one, is what they say, huge urban corridors going there. You know, from Montreal to Florida, you can show more and more exchange and density. That's about 100 million. That's the right size. Okay? This is the future of the urban world. Same thing on the East Coast, West Coast, of course, more or less. And you could do something on the Chinese places here, there, around Kolkata and Delhi, you know, and all Europe would be one big urban space in some ways. So they're telling us this is what is going on. These big city regions, this huge size thing, make irrelevant some of the old categories of politics. What do you mean? So it's global network, post-metropolis, post-cities. You know, there's a huge literature trying to invent words to frame this new urban world. It must be said, it is not very strong conceptually, except saying it's big and there are lots of networks, it doesn't tell us much. And even the famous book by Saskia Sassen, who was very important in global cities, she has pointed out to something which is more accentuated in those big cities, but it's no difference of nature. Cologne is more globalized than yesterday. So, you know, there's nothing very strong from a conceptual point of view. But the conclusion is, with all these very big cities, we have more inhabitants, more actors, more networks, so we don't care anymore about politics. That's the logic of what we see here. And that's what I would like to dispute. The logic is governance becoming irrelevant. Urban space is completely not differentiated. Cities are too complex, too big, too many actors. What's going on is explained by the force of capitalism. And then sometimes you have riots or insurgency. So usually literature on new social movements and insurgent movement. And you have all literature on assemblage, post-politics, cultural studies, and all of them are always telling us, you know, critique of rationalization, government domination, all this is not appropriate anymore. Okay? I do not exaggerate. I've read huge amount of this literature. It's very hard to find a good book on what's going on in both cities. And the nice thing about cities is that you show images to make my point. This is Shanghai. This is Sao Paulo. How do you govern when you have about 40% of slums in the urban areas? Illegal activities everywhere. Where are the limits? If you govern, usually you should have limits in your territory. You don't have limits, so you don't govern. The view from Chicago, from the lake, and then you go a long way, as you know, south. This is the busiest road in the world. What is it? No, it's not Bilbao, it's on purpose. You know that Frank Jerry wanted to create a theater in the center of Los Angeles, and it was turned down a long time ago. So he used the plan to create Bilbao. Okay? And then, many, many, many years ago, and that's interesting for us, the Los Angeles elite, and in Los Angeles, like the post-metropolis, they decided to create something very, very original. They decided to create a city center. So, what did they do? They created a new cathedral. They created new ethnic neighborhoods, a false former Chinatown. And they created a theater, because a city center should have a theater. So the Disney family asked old friend Jerry to come and do the same thing. Which already you can see what I'm saying here. There are lots of things similar everywhere, So we see the circulation of ideas and models. But at the same time, some very old-style idea like, let's create a city center, are new ideas in some of this supposed post-urban space. So Bilbao, very well known. This one. Abu Dhabi. Abu Dhabi and Dubai, as you probably know, are the most remarkable places to create very impressive architect movement, and you have all these new museums and all these new things. We want to be big global cities with museums and to specialize in that sort of things. Kuala Lumpur, the Chinese part of Hong Kong, so classic theme, undifferentiated urban space, who cares about governance and cities anymore? Okay? And to finish off, why bother about governance when we see in all these cities massive governance failure in terms of welfare, transport, housing, pollution? You have books after books, papers after papers, telling us about governance failures, showing that, you know, this is just gone. Of course, slums, that's the graveyard in Cairo, well known. The Bronx, and of course, ghettos, American cities. Favelas in South America. This is Rio. The pollution in Beijing, which is becoming an absolutely huge problem. They talk about the air apocalypse in Beijing. The rate of pollution these days is about 40 times the normal rate of pollution allowed by the International Health Organization. Or governance failure in the sense of ghost estates that you find in different places all around the world. Dublin being a good example of what you have, 2,000 ghost estates around Dublin. So failures all around the places. It's quite impressive. So when you go to an urban conference and you say, you know, I want to study public policy and governance of big cities, you are not obviously becoming someone popular. Postmodern cities, and I finish my argument, governance doesn't matter because cities are always in restructuration, they are fluid process, they are postmodern cities, you have day-to-day interactions, and now cities are organized by spectacles. It's a classic argument about the transformation of cities, explained by cultural ideas and by representation. And you know that Los Angeles, the development of LA was a mystery for economists for many years, because the development of LA is the image promoted by Hollywood and then private developers, and nothing else, basically. So the idea of LA became the engine for LA development for about 60 years. So the city is seen as, remember London, Olympic Games, transformed the image, big success in terms of rebranding the image of London. Urban development is about branding by private organization, because in the Olympic Games, they experimented a new model of governance, which was 42,000 private contract with a semi-private agency and no public authorities at all, as much as possible. Okay, so private governance of the city in a large city. So that was where it was, Stratford, on the east of London. A very poor neighborhood, by the way, the poorest in England. Life expectancy 76, which is not much for an average figure. 550 nationalities, 50% unemployment rate. And then you do the Olympic Games. Yay! London as the center of the world. And hence the question, London, the new city of light, organized by Event. They like the city of light in London. And they like unfortunate events, but not just the Olympic Games. You may remember that 1 year before the Olympic Games in London was also famous for something different, with a lot of light too, called urban riots, which took place. And nice things, you know, all over London and the north of England, quite precise and tough riots going on at the same time. So that's the view. Who cares about governance? You have police on one end, you have riots and insurgency, or private governance sounds like a science fiction novel, really, in some ways, when you look at it. Now, of course, it never happens in Paris. Very different. And as I tell my students, last Fridays for 2005, you know, 8 years, next 2 years, we should have a next round of riots in Paris, because public policy don't always solve problems. Last point, the problem of these largesses is that a lot of governance is relying upon the state, and you may know we have a large situation on failed states, particularly in Africa, and we see in a number of cities the inability to collect tax, to provide goods and services to the population, or to protect the population. And we see that extremely strong violence and complete lack of governance in a number of cities. Or not complete, but governance of a little bit of the city and all the rest not very governed. These are images from Khartoum in Sudan or Luanda in Angola. But of course, I could have taken Mogadishu in Somalia, would have been an even better case. So Khartoum. So on the one end, this is a classic view. And then you have a new development. If you have money, you are welcome. They look for investors in the new sexy, trendy development for luxury flats on the seas, on the river in Khartoum. This is being built, not just an image. And at the same time, the new religious center of Khartoum. And of course, a huge, 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 extremely large slum areas. And who governs those ones? Well, it's violence as the dominant way to govern in the city. And that would be the classic view of understanding. Rwanda, some areas, you can invest on a lake. Some traffic problems sometimes. A view from very far away, the suburbs. And then the more you go away, the more you see a different type of environment. Okay, so conclusion, big cities are ungovernable. So we don't care about all these old-fashioned European ideas of governance. Globalization make political and policy choice irrelevant. Collective action is only contentious politics. You have to think about a different kind of post-metropolis, whatever that means. You have to think about citizen without cities. You have to think about informality, because the large urbanization process is about slums, shanty towns, barrios, favelas, and sometimes people try to plan. Planning is not implemented in most places. One way to frame the argument is to use the ungovernability language. And you may remember there's a famous book by Douglas Yates, who used to write about New York in 77. In all the 70s, there were several books about those places becomes ungovernable. Either New York, in the case of Yates, and the all huge literature, if you have done public policy, you remember Pressman, Vildavsky, all these people, implementation failure, huge literature in the US. So governance has become irrelevant. Okay. It reminds us of the crisis of democracy in the 70s. And it's one report I like very much. It's coming from the Secretary of State of Defense in the US, 2009, by Robert Lamb. I recommend this lecture for anyone interested in politics. And this project is called Ungoverned Area Project. This report is saying the barbarians are everywhere. If you look beyond the US, even within the US, there are more and more spaces and more things which are ungoverned, and we should be worried. Places where the state or the central government is unable to extend control to govern, And this is a big problem. Where are these ungoverned spaces, according to the Secretary of State in the US? Well, remote and rogue regions, you know, far away, like Afghanistan and these other places. The virtual space, internet, is not governed according to good US norms. The sea, because the pirates are coming back, as we know. But, most importantly, the enemy is also within. And he has very nice developments on the urban milieu, the cities, as a place of danger, because they are fragmented, they are too vast, they are not governed, they are illicit actors, no-go areas, they are slums, and they are even in the middle of the US. So these questions, for me, what is interesting is, all this is ungoverned. This sort of view of the world, either it is completely governed, you know, in a classic way, or it is dangerous and ungoverned. But of course, and I've start trying to rephrase my argument, this is, of course, an argument which doesn't make sense by all means. And again, I will come back to Michel Foucault, because you understand I like him, even if I don't understand everything, far from it. We know from a long, long way that it's not like white and dark. We know about lots of elements of grey. Historians have told us about all these elements where, by developing rationalization process, at the same time, government creates illegal activities or tolerate illegal activities. But it's not just a linear process of more and more rationalization. There are some grey areas which, as always, are there. Like today, if you take the French police, of course not in Germany, the French police is very rational and organized and bureaucratic, but they do also lots of illegal things. So the agents of the state are also creating illegal or doing illegal activities. So we know from the origins that to understand governance, if we're not too rational, we have to understand at the same time this interplay between what is white, what is grey, what is dark. And these are extremely connected in all sorts of ways. We know in cities, for instance, that whatever legal status, there was always some tolerance for illegal activities, from prostitution to various trafficking, from police illegal behavior. There are always some grey zone in those illegal development. So what I want to do is really maybe to use those insights, number one, to revise possibly the governance framework, but also to argue, you know, we should not be too worried about all this literature on ungovernability. It's a famous paper by Richard Rose, the great British public policy scholar, the most important British public policy scholar, saying, you know, ungovernability, don't worry too much. There are always some need, some requirement, and some demand for some forms of governance. And I will follow this idea. The point I want to make is that, of course, these very large metropolis, from London to Lagos, they are not completely governed in a rational way. Okay? But it doesn't matter so much. Nothing is ever completely governed in a rational way. That's something we have learned for a long time. We agree that the development of those cities is not explained uniquely by government. Yes, there is capitalism. Yes, there are some social forces. It doesn't mean that governance plays no role. So it's still interesting to see more precisely the interplay. Yes, we agree that in the global south there may be new categories and new theory with new practices. Possibly. And we have example of that. But also, some old categories still can make sense in different contexts. Sometimes. We know that we have very strong informal sectors in all those large cities. But being informal does not mean not being governed. And in those informal sectors, we should ask the question, what is governed when nobody governs? Who governs when nobody governs? And we can look at various forms of regulations and governance, which may not be in relation to public authorities. We agree it's complex, there are many conflicts, we agree with all that. It does not mean that it's not interesting to think a bit more on the governance of those cities, on what is governed and what is not governed, and not just thinking, oh, it's ungovernable. By contrast, I would even go further. I would say that to understand some of the transformation of governance, including in the West or in our cities, we have to think more precisely on the limits of governance. After all, the whole issue of post-democracy, trying to think about the transformation of political regulations, is also trying to assess the extent to which there is some political capacity, there is some governance capacity in some domain, and decreasing in some other domain. So I think it's part of the same agenda in many ways. So I hope you see the strong connections between the three lectures. So let's ask basic questions in both cities. Let's see if we take the classic categories of political economy and governance, we can go some ways to explain something. And surprise, surprise, we do. If we ask basic questions like, you know, where are the interest groups? What are their repertoire? How do they organize collectively? We can go a long way. In all of these cities, we find rich families, we find rich individuals, Li Ka-ching in Hong Kong, big property owners, or Carlos Slim in Mexico, second richest person in the world. We find large firms, Samsung in Seoul, first private developer in Seoul. We find churches, property owners, banks, foundations, street vendors organizations, trade unions, political parties, truck drivers. we find lots of interest groups. So for someone basically interested in urban politics, in most of those cities I'm mentioning, we can go a long way just to look at those interest groups, the role they play, the role the repertoire they use, how they influence various decisions. You know, already you can do a lot of work. Second, let's do a capacity to develop things. Because for me, politics is also about policies and what is created. What we see in all these urban areas are the making of new neighborhood, of new district. There are big urban renovation projects. So there are strong urban capacity. Government capacity is there. Lots of things are being done. It's not like completely, you know, blocked and nothing is going on. There are big projects which are implemented. In many ways, remarkable capacity. I will give you examples in a minute. Thirdly, when you look at what's going on in those large cities, and your friend tell you it's all ungovernable, it's all a big mess. Yes, but you see more and more utility networks. You see transport, you see water, you see energy networks. It's not perfect, it's not everywhere, but you can see the different waste disposal, you can see the rise and development of all these utility networks, which are the foundations of all these cities. And I'll come back to that. Those utilities are very strong regulatory mechanism in all sorts of ways, and they're very strong political economy of utilities. And here we go even further. In all of these cities, you see lots of public policies being implemented. You see social policies, economic development policies, environment policies. They are not perfect, they do not solve all the problems, but lots of things are being done. Let me take the example of Mexico. I've started to do some work on Mexico, and I will give you some example of that. When you look at the literature on Mexico, you're told it's a big mess, lots of overlapping powers and competences, nothing is done, lots of traffic, chaos. You know, Mexico is the urban Leviathan, completely ungovernable. When you ask basic questions, as I've been doing, you see very strong social policy which has been developed over the last 15 years, very systematic and rather generous, implemented at the level of the main municipality of the center of Mexico. You see cultural policy, you see transport, you see the making of big neighborhoods, you see the development of an environment policy, you see remarkable effective waste disposal policy. One of the first projects we're doing is comparing waste policy in London and Mexico is far more effective than London. We see an all new business district, nearly as big as the Docklands, has been built in 15 years. So much for lack of governance capacity. It's called Santa Fe. We've seen an all new transport system, and metro was very small. It has expanded massively there. Contrast with the time done or put in Paris or London to develop their new Crossrail or Grand Paris transport project. It's big capacity. You see very strong policy of renovation of the city center. We see an all new neighborhood with cultural district and, you know, the Bilbao thing. This is interesting. This is a new museum which I recommend, the Sumaya Museum. It was built by Carlos Slim, the big millionaire of Mexico. What is interesting is the combination. Number one, just all around this museum is an entirely new neighborhood, a big district, residential and business, which is, you know, you see equivalent of them in some other cities in the world, but it's a huge operation. What is interesting is that the architect is called Mr. Romero, but the architect is the husband of his daughter. And he works with, from Jerry again, the same guy we mentioned before. So you see the mix of familial capitalism, international architect, the imitation element, but together with very strong public-private partnership with the local authority, circulation, and very strong project. Very strong capacity. So Mexico, you have huge project being developed and implemented with huge money. By contrast, if I look at London and Paris, not everything is governed. We see squats, migrations, tax evasion, mobile populations, drugs. Lots of things are not governed in Paris and London in a classical sense. And we can measure that in a systematic way. So Yes, governments govern in London and Paris, but not everything, not all the time. And there are lots of places in the suburbs of Paris where nobody cares at all. So the urban experience is not taking place in a vacuum. Of course, we have institutions. We know that we have inheritance in lots of these large cities I mentioned. We have a colonial experience with conflict, religion, central correlations, type of inequalities. This is structuring what is going on in terms of governance. So some of the classic model we have about institutions work very well. We have types of states. We have property rights. We have solving mechanism. We have lots of things that we can relate and play with to understand both the political economy of these cities and the way they're governed. We have to be less rationalist, of course, but they are not ungovernable, okay? And can I just emphasize, each time you have a big urbanization process, there's always a catastrophic view of cities, which is put forward, you know, the ungovernability rhetoric. It's coming out, coming back on a regular basis in history. So, yes, there are failures, there are problems, but there are also lots of things being done, and it makes a huge difference for the population of these cities. Can I just emphasize, of course, these big cities are characterized by massive inequalities. Public policy makes a huge difference. When you manage to get good water for a large part of the population, it makes a huge difference for this population. When you put in place an education infrastructure, it makes a huge difference. So those public policies are even more important in many ways than in our cities. And there's a little bit of not taking that into account in what I was saying. I will not develop this point, but can I just remind you that those cities are organized also by these huge utility networks. And there's a big part of large, biggest, largest firms in the world, which are utility firms. E.ON in Germany, Veolia, Bouygues, all these firms are amazingly huge urban operator. And they deal with local authorities, and they need the force of the state to implement, or the public authority to implement their networks. And this is huge money in waste disposal, energy, graveyards, telecoms, the building industry. And if you are interested in finance, you may have heard, this is my favorite story, the Macquarie Group. Macquarie was a small, nothing, little fund in Australia. And before everybody else, they started to create special funds for infrastructure and to finance private equity, public-private partnership, all sorts of infrastructure. And they finance new bridges, new water network, new airport all over the world. They have become one of the biggest financial fund in the world by financing urban infrastructure. They own, operate all sorts of infrastructure business, from airport to all sorts of networks. So the finance, if we are interested in capitalism, and I will not do that today, but I've got that in my mind, is urban financial capitalism is very, very strong. And you know also that housing, private developments, all these elements have become more and more financial as well. Not just... Okay, so what do we do with that? Well, with my colleagues, what we try to do is, number one, to revise a little bit our classic conception of governance. By saying, number one, we know that governance is not a linear process. It's not always rational. It is often incomplete. And we should emphasize discontinuities. We know in the theory of government and governance that these government activities are not always stable over time. And Michael Mann, in particular, in the history of the state, reminds us that at time of war, you have a very strong density of capacity of the state to extract resources, to mobilize various people. Well, the same thing applies for cities or for metropolis. There, at times, you have more dense, more intense governance going on, and at times, it's much less so. Second, it's not linear from a territorial point of view. It is not because those cities are very big that they cannot be governed. Just what is governed in those cities varies a lot over time and, you know, over the spatial. If you look at Paris, to take my favorite example, the city center of Paris is massively governed. You have huge public policy, police everywhere, control on everything, huge amount of services. When we had the first riots in 1981 in France, you know, in this big estate, 80 kilometers away from Paris, in Grigny or Mantes-la-Jolie, you know, just small things with 30, 40,000 people. There was no public policies, no buses, no services, no police station, no school. There was nothing. The public authorities hardly knew where that was. It was not governed, in my language. There was just very weak level of governance. The same thing applies to all these big cities. Part of those cities are heavily governed. You can measure that. Capacity to get tax, capacity to implement public policies, capacity to control the space, to guarantee property rights. By contrast, some other parts of the city are very weakly governed, with very little, but sometimes it's not because it's informal, but it stays informal. You know that in Istanbul or in São Paulo, some of these informal favelas or je sais quoi, over time, they become formal. And they have water networks, and sometimes the police will come, and proper rights might be established over time. So it's all process of slow institutionalization of governance which is taking place. So of course there are too many actors. Of course there are overlapping scales. Of course there are, you know, all these elements I've been mentioning before. But still, we find in all these places public authorities trying to define rules, to tax rates, to try to solve conflict, to try to organize utility networks. We find protests, we have political parties, we find election, we find police, army, correction mechanism. Of course it's partial, there are some discontinuities, it's not a linear process, but you know, there's absolutely no reason, I would say even more, this is even more interesting to look at the governance of these places, because it tells us a lot about what can be governed and the role of political regulations in structuring those big cities. It may not be very much, but it does give us some insight about what is going on, including with the failures, hence the mobile population I mentioned before. And you can look at the quality of this government in the sense of Borofstein, he has a big project in Gothenburg. You can look at impartiality of rule of law, of efficient social institutions. You can try to check whether there's a corruption or no corruption. And there are some very interesting results, because of course corruption, it's only in places like Africa. Of course, when I used to study London, my English colleagues always told me, you know, corruption is for the continent and for the rest of the world, but never in London. And I used to tell them it's funny, because when I studied the Docklands, and I used to study the Docklands, it was interesting that the most important property developers Trafalgar has, who was financing the Docklands operations and benefiting from the big operations, happened to be the first financer of the Conservative Party. And he happened to see Mrs. Thatcher once a month. Just happened, you know? He was sent to jail at a later stage for corruption. But, you know, these things were quite strong. So there are good reasons to think in governance terms, to use Jem Scott, thinking about how those cities are making more legible, how various rationalization processes are taking place, how various instruments are used, how various equipment of power are developed over time. They may not be local. A lot of governance creation mechanism are related to international organization, so we are very familiar with that. But we see the mobilization of those various elements. So who governs and what is governed when nobody governs? We also, and I think I am interested in understanding what's going on when governments doesn't work. And we've got some ideas. You know, I've been studying Italy, I've been in Napoli, I know what happens when nobody governs. Some alternative mechanism can take place. Sometimes nice one, like associations and NGOs, all the ones you like. All my students, they want to work in NGOs and to save the world. So this takes place. You also have nasty ones like mafias and gangs. And we know that these mechanisms exist in a number of neighborhoods and of course in parts of those cities. Of course, never in France, you know. When we had the riots in 2005, it just happened that one of the worst places in France called Marseille, there was no riot whatsoever. Everywhere else except Marseille. Why? Of course, riots are bad for business. You know, the northern neighborhoods of Marseille are well known for being most organized by drug traffickers. So they don't want riots. It's very bad for money making. Okay? So this is not just in Rio de Janeiro, okay? And we know that in London, there are parts of London which are also governed by alternative mechanisms, which are not always visible. So I just go back from classic definitions of government. And for me, just trying to check whether what it means to govern, to establish rules, to give money, to take decisions, to solve conflict, to produce goods, to coordinate behaviors, to regulate markets, organize elections, to extract resources, to tax, to control, to use coercions, to implement policies, and to redistribute resources. And basically what I would like to do with my colleagues is just take that and measure whether it is implemented or not in a number of cities. This is just very basic, but I think it would be very useful to understand the changing and transformation of those cities. So again, the literature is very weak. Most of the literature on the large cities, they either look at formal government organizations, the city council, the power, the budget, and doesn't tell us anything about what's going on, or planning. Planning. And planning is not implemented in most places. So they look at planning and they conclude planning doesn't work. So we don't have many good books. There are a few of them, but really not many. So classic questions that I mentioned before, and try to understand the limits of what, which sectors are governed, which mechanism change over time, what does it tell us on the transformation of those cities, including the dark side of governance. In a way, one criticism which can be put to the governance literature is that it tries to look at when why problems are solved and mechanisms to solve problems and to create collective capacity. Sometimes we have not emphasized enough the mechanism of governance, which are not nice in many ways. Sometimes I tell my students that la gouvernance is the enchanted land of governance. Huh? When you look at the white paper of the EU, you know, the nice governance, be very nice. Some of my colleagues write about the nice governance of the EU. I have some doubts. I have some very strong doubts. When you look at governance, you also have to look at mechanism to produce collective action, like clientelism, like corruption. Very few books on corruption and governance in a systematic way. But I can tell you, when I've looked at Paris, I can say lots of things when I conclude, concentrate on corruption to understand the development of Paris. So the point is also to look at those dark side of governance, on what is not governed, and those alternative mechanisms. The project is called WIG, What is Governed? Okay? And for the time being, we are just accumulating work on Paris and London, but we will do work also on Mexico and São Paulo. So the aim is to define this framework I've been starting to present to you, to think about the role of political regulations in urban societies, and to write a framework to, you know, explain the making of modes of governance in those large cities, to compare them, and to look at what does it produce, what are the outcomes. It's a group of people, with my group at Sciences Po, so some people you may know, the great economist Stolper, Charlotte Alpern, who used to be here. And what I've been doing over the last 2 or 3 years is spend some time to choose my partners, and we've decided to start by Paris, London, São Paulo, and Mexico. You would be amazed by how little systematic comparative work exists in the urban literature. It's a big weakness comparing to the political economy, the national political economy literature. There is not one book comparing Paris and London, except by historians. But I know 3 projects which have failed to deliver. So it's difficult. So what we're trying to do is, let's accumulate, in a number of domains I will explain, number of research on each of these 4 cities and compare them. Okay? And then compare at various levels what we can do to try to say something. Some of my colleagues want to work on Istanbul and Delhi, but I'm very cautious. I think we have enough with London, Paris, São Paulo, and Mexico. And the idea is to accumulate resources and money and research on those 4 cities and to compare them 2 by 2 in different sort of ways. How are we going to do that? Accumulation of research, comparison, circulation. Basically, and that's my final point, we want to, number one, we look at each time to analyze and compare both the level of the governance of those cities and precise public policy or precise project. You cannot just compare because you don't know. Very hard to research. So number one, we tried for each of these cities to write historical paper on the development of governance of this big city. So the game is we write 100 pages on how to understand the historical development of governance in Paris, London, Rio and São Paulo and Mexico, and to look at, you know, inheritance from the past, from conflict, from the making of parties in Mexico, from the welfare state, from dictatorship, with all these classic questions in terms of budgets, elite, main actors, social movement, conflict, conflict mechanism, existing of big actors, veto players, the classic question, okay? And see what we know in those four cities. Second, what we plan to do is to look precisely at some public policies, which is a different level of analysis, okay? And look at how those policies were developed and implemented over time. So we have chosen for the time being social policy, environment, economic development, maybe culture. And what we want to do in the four cities is to look over time how those cities were initiated, those policies developed, implemented. And when I mean comparison, we want to look at the circulation. We want to see if Frank Gehry is building the same buildings in the four cities. What circulation is going on between the recipe of public policy, between the expert, between the consultant, between international organization, and to compare the outcomes. As I mentioned before, the first bit of research we have been doing on waste disposal policy in London and Mexico clearly shows that the Mexican model is much more effective than London. Okay? So systematically compare public policies over time. Thirdly, in order to bring some meat to this question, let's look at utility networks and look at the role of private firms, at transport, water, waste, telecoms, housing, and look at who builds, who operates, who decides, who controls, who benefits from those utility networks, which are central for any city. Point four, let's look at big projects. Cities are about the development of big projects. So we're going to look in a systematic way at classic problem, like how you develop a new airport. Once upon a time, in one city we know, there was an attempt to create, to expand a big airport, and there were big social movements, and the airport was cancelled. Mexico, Paris, London, São Paulo, the jury is still out. So we want to study also the capacity to build new infrastructure from the point of view of the state, or to impose some of this big infrastructure. As you know, anyone who wants to create a new nuclear factory, a new nuclear plant station, you know, in the 60s, it was possible, at least in France. The state would say, we have a Gaulist state, we do a nuclear plant, you know, we do it. And basically it worked, except in some remote corner of Brittany because we protested. But except in Brittany, you could do your nuclear plant station. Nowadays, good luck. And I think you understand that in Germany very well. So we want to measure also the capacity, the governance capacity. It's not good or bad, by the capacity to develop big projects, business district, urban renovation, airports. Fifthly, we want to analyze and compare systematically what I call the hidden side of governance by looking at what is not governed, by looking at illegal activities. We can get some data, not a huge amount, we can get some, by the regulation of marginal groups, like slums, rural squatters, corruption, and to try to see the impact on the urban governance in each of these cities. And finally, we want to study systematically circulations between those four cities. I mentioned already policies, expert, blah, 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 but we're trying to use the media lab. At Sciences Po, we have Brola too, has developed a media lab. We're trying to develop new tools to look at the way each city is linked to the other cities through some data crawlers, and we're trying to explore some of this new methodology to find the virtual space whether we can get some element. We started by Paris and London. We find some very interesting things, but we have no idea how to interpret the data, so we're a bit lost. But we're developing new methodology to look at the link between the four cities. That's the plan of WIG, is to try to be systematic over 7 years with a group of people. We have PhD students, postdoc, working in the four cities. We are accumulating money to get research program. And we hope to be able to say something on political regulations in those different cities. Thank you.